This episode of Rhodey Radio is brought to you by your local library's Library of Things. Did you know that your library has more than just books and movies? Libraries across Rhode Island lend out all sorts of unconventional items. You can borrow fishing gear, ukuleles, tools, games and puzzles, telescopes, and more. Whether you want to try a new hobby or keep the kids occupied, Ocean State Libraries have what you need. Contact your local library to find out what's in their Library of Things.
And so that's our cat situation there. I'm not sure if that's exactly what you wanted to talk about, but, you know.
No, that's great. I feel like that was an excellent icebreaker. We know each other. We're both cat people. It's great. You're listening to Rhodey Radio, Rhode Island Library Radio online. I'm your host, Lauren Walker, from the Rhodey Radio crew and Coventry Public Library. And today I'm talking with Sean Cologne. It's Cologne, right?
That's correct, like the fragrance, okay. But not spelled that way.
Right, okay.
It's spelled like colon.
Yes.
But there's an accent on the second O that makes it smell better.
I saw, yeah. Nice.
It's my mom's joke, by the way.
That's hilarious.
It takes Sean a second, Cologne, right?
Yeah. Sean Cologne is a filmmaker, writer, and producer who is currently working on a documentary titled Age of Audio about the history, art form, and technology of podcasting. Sean is best known for his documentary film, A Fat Wreck, which chronicles the history and impact of the punk rock record label Fat Records. He is known for his passion for audio, his prioritization of collaboration, community, social awareness, and inclusivity in art, and his efforts to document, promote, and support art and culture through his work. He's been on a sort of podcast tour promoting the upcoming Age of Audio documentary, and we're excited to host him here on Rhodey Radio. Welcome, Sean.
Thanks for having me. I'm a big fan of Rhode Island.
Oh, that's great. We're glad that you know where it is.
Well, not only that, but like, so I was working on a different documentary, which will hopefully come out after Age of Audio, because I'm almost done with it. But the subjects were based in New Bedford, a little north of you guys. Mm-hmm. And I, as a filmmaker who's resourceful, I do Uber and Lyft, and one of the things about Lyft is you can do it almost anywhere. So when we were filming for this other documentary, we were in New Bedford for about, you know, 2 to 3 weeks. So in the mornings, I would drive down to Providence and then do Lyft in Providence.
Oh, okay.
So like in the mornings, I just remember crossing that bridge and you got Brown University over there and you got some, and it was, so that part I know pretty well. And it turns out I know a lot of like cool people that live in Rhode Island. So of course Chris Revel, I'm sure that he's popped up from time to time, mm-hmm. and Chuck Stanton, he does a lot of stuff with Kevin Smith's, the comic book guys from I have like these interesting connections with Rhode Island in multiple ways. So it's like it's really like a homecoming in a lot of ways. I appreciate the state and find it to be, I don't know, the people that I've met from there are some of the coolest people I know. So,
well, that's great to hear. And they probably all also know each other because that happens a lot in Rhode Island.
I bet.
There's a lot of like just suddenly talking to someone and you find out that like they're your cousin's best friend or something like that.
What's interesting is I'm in Texas, probably one of the biggest states. Mm-hmm. And Rhode Island, I think, is the smallest state. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
So, but impactful. What an impactful place.
Well, thank you. That's lovely. We agree. So tell me about Age of Audio.
So almost 6 years ago, I was actually working on the film I was talking about previously it's about this band from New Bedford called A Wilhelm Scream, and the movie's called Anchor End. But while we were filming for that documentary, and it's a good story, While we were filming for that documentary, like I said previously, we were in New Bedford for a grip of time, but we were also followed them on a little bit of a tour, the band, Wilhelm Scream. And one of the places they stopped in was Brooklyn in New York. And that same night we were going to be filming with them, one of my favorite bands was playing, called Propagandy. And one of the guys that was friends with the guys from Wilhelm Scream was opening up that show with his band Heart Sounds. And he knew we were filming. So he's like, hey, would you come to the show, which I was going to go to anyway, and film our opening set? And I was like, hell yeah, that's awesome. Maybe you can get us in and maybe I can get a refund on these tickets or sell them or something. And on our way there, I got a text. He's like, hey, my uncle's going to come to the show. My uncle is Ira Glass.
Whoa.
So at the show, I ended up hanging out with Ira Glass and telling him about the movie. And it wasn't just like a brief meeting. We hung out for like an hour. He came, he was at that show, which already, like, Ira Glass at a punk rock show. This is crazy.
That's
already.
Like such a fun story already. Yeah.
Right. So like these two worlds are colliding, which I never thought would collide, you know, like, it's just like mind blowing. And then he also came to the Wilhelm show and he hung out. He's really cool guy. And we connected, but I didn't really think anything of that. And previously, some of your listeners might know of Roman Mars. He does this podcast, 99% Invisible. Mm-hmm. He's a punk rock fan. And when I did my first movie, A Fat Wreck, I had sent him a copy and asked him what he thought because he's a great storyteller. So I was curious and I could kind of deduce that he's a punk rock guy. And he sent me back this, you know, very nice message saying what he thought. And eventually I asked him if I could use that as like a pull quote for our Blu-ray. And so he was on the Blu-ray. And after that show, we were in the Washington, D.C., Baltimore area. And we did an interview with this podcaster, and his name is Dallas Taylor. And he does this podcast, 20,000 Hertz, and it's all about sound. And if you haven't listened to it, I highly recommend you go checking out. It's like 99% Invisible or This American Life, but all about audio. Like, what do different sounds come from, the stories behind sound. And so it's a really amazing podcast. And he had done an episode about the Wilhelm Scream. And if your listeners aren't familiar, that's a sound that sound designers in many movies have used. It's a scream that gets used over and over in lots of different places. It's really like, once you hear it, you can't unhear it. It's been used in Star Wars and like Indiana Jones and like on TV shows. I think there's like over 400 or something movies that it's been documented that it's in. And so he had done an episode and the band we were filming was A Wilhelm Scream. So I thought it'd be a good like mini documentary thing to talk to him about. And so we met him, we were talking and I told him about meeting Ira Glass after our interview. And we were chatting and we were talking about Roman Mars and Ira. And like at the end of the conversation, he's like, hey man, you know Roman and you now apparently know Ira Glass. Like, why aren't you doing a podcast documentary? And I was like, oh, I'm sure you don't allow cussing, but I was like, F you, dude. I was like, now I have to do that. Like, why did you say that? Cause now I have to do that. So that's where the idea really kind of came from. It wasn't really necessarily an idea that I had right off the bat, but it was kind of like presented to me as I was in a unique position at that point to tell the story, at least of a certain portion of podcasting, because I had access to potential assets to two of some of the bigger names in that space. And so I reached out to Roman and I asked him if he would do an interview. And of course, he was like, yeah, sure, whatever. I'm down. And so that kind of set things off. Shortly thereafter, I went to South by Southwest, which is a big media, film, and music festival. And the company PRX, which hosts a lot of different podcasts, and some of your listeners may be familiar with some of the shows that they've distributed. And they were doing a meetup at South by. And when I was there, I live in Dallas, for context. So Austin is only like a 2 or 3 hour drive from me. So I usually go down to South by. And I ran into the sales agent for my first movie, A Fat Wreck, and he asked me what I was working on, and I was working on that one movie, but I had mentioned that I potentially could do this podcast documentary, and he was like, oh, I can get money for that. Like, what? I was like,
it's always nice to hear.
Well, takes a lot longer, but it was very encouraging. But the day after he told me that was the PRX meetup at South By. So I went to the South By PRX meetup and basically pitched Julie Shapiro, Chris Bannon, who was with Stitcher at the time, some of the people from iHeart. And I said, hey, I want to do this documentary. I think I can get money for it. And they were all like, yeah, that sounds awesome. Like, Roman said he would do it? Oh, great. And so they gave me their contact information, said they would connect me with a lot of people. And basically that was the starting point, like, of the movie, where it felt in a lot of ways. I think 2 or 3 months later, we were filming in Boston with Radiotopia Live. They were doing a live thing at the time and kind of kicked off the whole movie. Now, I will say the first part really went. Like, people were, yes, but movies are really hard. So that was 6 years ago almost.
Oh, wow.
That was 2018. I think that's we'll be coming up on 6 years here pretty soon. And since then, we've done a bunch of interviews. I think at this point, we've done like about 44, 45 interviews with different. Okay. Ira Glass agreed to do an interview. We've talked to a lot of major players in that particular area of the storytelling podcast space. Some of the people who were involved in the early days of eventing podcasts, like Adam Curry, the VJ, who is credited with co-creating podcasts, or at least the concept of making an RSS feed for audio, which enabled distribution for podcasts. And since then, we've been steadily working on it. I'm an independent guy, so it's, we got some money. My executive, he's now an executive producer, but he was able to raise some initial funds. And so we were able to get a little bit of money. And so, yeah, we've been working on it steadily and trying to piece things together. We filmed a bulk of our interviews in 2019.
Oh, wow.
Just as we landed in New York the day that it was announced that that Spotify was buying Gimlet for $200 million and kind of kicking off the podcast boom. Which we're still kind of filming some of that. We're going to be including some of that, what's kind of the contraction as well, in the film. But yeah, that's kind of that's kind of the genesis of where the movie came from. And over the last few years, we've sporadically done different interview trips, and I've been editing during the pandemic. We got a lot of editing done, and we're very
close. Yeah, that's a great opportunity.
Yeah, well, we couldn't do anything else. But yeah, I would say we're pretty close to being done. I would like to be done. I would very much like to be done. But I'm really excited about this stage. We're in the I think by the time this comes out, the crowdfunding thing has since ended. But during that period of time, we really kind of really went very public with the film, and I got a email the other day from the chief communication officer of NPR, essentially pitching us on why we should include NPR in the movie, which is interesting, because obviously I'm a big fan of NPR and would want to include them. So that the fact that they would be reaching out and thinking that the movie is something of significance that they would want to be a part of is encouraging. I'm a fan. I've been an audio engineer for a long time. Since about 2004, I've been a certified audio engineer, and really have been a fan of audio, both musically, but then got really into podcasts. I'm an auditory learner, which is sad for, I'm not much of a reader.
Oh, I mostly listen to audiobooks, so don't feel bad about
okay,
that.
Okay, good, because I listen to audiobooks.
That counts as reading.
Okay, I'm going to count that, because I do love learning and learning about things, but I find that I retain quite a bit from listening. So like podcasts I barely listen to music anymore. It's all podcasts all the time, all day, mostly. when I'm not doing an interview or doing something else that I can't, that I requires me talking. I'm basically listening to podcasts all the time and listening to audio storytelling and different, not just storytelling, but like different, you know, news podcasts and information. And really the medium spoke to me. So literally, it literally spoke to me. And I am in a unique position where I'm a fan of the space, and also have the ability to kind of tell this portion of the story. I think podcasting is such a big thing. I think, I have a saying that, podcasting is a medium, not a genre. It's to me, it's like, hey man, do you read books?
Yeah.
Do you listen to podcasts? Do you listen to music? You know, I mean, do you watch TV? And part of my goal with the movie is to kind of elevate the medium, or at least make a case to elevate the medium to the same level as film or television or novels, that like it's a medium. So like you can make a pyramid scheme pamphlet, or you can write a novel that changes people's lives. It the breadth is there. And I feel like that way about podcasting, that it can be, you know, someone who's promoting their business and wanting to like, you know, use it as a way to talk to their business audience and generate leads and things like that. Or it can be something that affects someone profoundly and emotionally and tells a story that can't be told in any of those other mediums. Because to me, it's an interesting, it's like a book, but it's not. Because you still have theater of the mind, but it's not like reading a book, because that's a different experience. And I do like reading. I just have the ADHD, and I find that I'm always on the move. So like podcasts is really something that really kind of like works for me. Cause I have read Isaac Asimov's Foundation and the trilogy. So I have read before and I have read novels and things like that. But to me it has this attribute where you feel connected so connected with the people that are talking to you, and it can do what a novel can do, where it can create this theater of the mind, but also you have someone talking to you, so you feel like they're with you. So like it's a honor and a privilege to be able to kind of tell this story of podcasting, because I want to point out like I'm not the first podcast documentary. There are two other documentaries that exist about podcasting, but they both were created prior to Serial and prior to the boom. And so they really document a time before podcasting was in the zeitgeist, before it was mm-hmm. something that everyone knew about, when it was something that if you said the word podcast, they're like, what? Now, if you say the word podcast, people know what that means. They have a concept of what a podcast is, and whether it's right or wrong, because usually people think of Joe Rogan or something like that. But it's no longer do you have to say, oh, I'm going on a podcast, and people go, what is that? They kind of know, they have an idea.
Yeah.
And so this is the first, and also I think it's the first film, to my knowledge, that really does a deep dive on the audio storytelling side. And that's why our subtitle is A Tale of Modern Audio Storytelling. And the movie's not called Podcast, 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 Who's Got the Podcast? Because although we do acknowledge those type of podcasts, and I listen to a lot of them, like the two people talking, it really explores the medium of audio in the storytelling side and what the power of that is and how impactful it can be. So... was that a long-winded answer?
No, I think you told me about the age of audio. I completely agree, by the way, about the connection aspect of it. I feel like that's one of the reasons why podcasts are really popular, is because I think people have a hard time with connection right now, especially after COVID and being like distanced from people for a while. And, you know, I personally got to a point where I was like not hanging out with anyone because I was very anxious about COVID. And then even after that, I was in a spot of like, do I really want to leave my house? I'm so comfortable. And it took me a little while to get like social again. And I think a lot of people have had a similar experience. And so it's comforting that like, even if you don't see your friends all the time, or you don't, you're not super social, like if you're listening to a podcast, it feels like you're connecting with someone, which I guess could be good or bad, but let's say it's good.
I think as long as it doesn't become detrimental to your life and you're still exploring relationships, and it's not the only thing you're doing, I think for me, it's enhanced my life and understanding. And the reason I know I retain a lot from podcasts is because when I go into the real world and talk to people, all of a sudden I have all this knowledge that comes out of somewhere, you know, like I live in Dallas and Dallas, Texas. And one thing I can tell people is like, do you know that Dallas was almost a port town? And if you know where Dallas is, it's like, you know, hours north, you know, like somewhere in the order of like 8 hours away from the coast, right? Wow. Well, they were going to build a lock system all the way up to Dallas. And the only reason I know that is because of 99% Invisible did an episode about that. And that, and in that same episode, I know that they raised the city of Chicago in the late 1800s. All the buildings, they raised them up 12 feet because they had to put a sewer system in. And I also know that they reversed the river there. And I know that because of the podcast. And like these things, like I find that they surface these things that I've learned surface themselves in conversation. And I'm like, man, I listen to a lot of podcasts because I have all this knowledge. And so I clearly retained a lot from it, you know? So, like I said, with the movie, I'm hoping to kind of pull back the curtain a little bit on what it takes to make these things so people can appreciate that it takes a lot of work. I'm sure you know that even doing an interview podcast, there's a lot of like setting up interview times, reaching out to people. Like there's like behind the scenes getting it published. You have to write a thing. Like it's not just setting up microphones. There's like people who are doing this are putting in a lot of effort to make a thing that people can listen to and hopefully make a part of their lives if you're lucky. You know, I know the podcasts that I listen to, if they don't publish on time, I start getting worried about them. And I go on Twitter, I'm like, are they okay? They didn't publish. Are they, you know, are they sick? Did something happen? They get in a car accident? I'm like, you know, because it becomes part of your routine. And for me, it enriches my life in a lot of ways. I mean, the movie aside, you know, I like the problem is if I get into something, I get so deeply into it. At this point, I started making a documentary about it. Well, I like that was like a thing. Like I really liked punk rock, and I say that in the past tense because I'm just not into it the same way I was. And I think it has to do with the fact that I got too into it. When you make a documentary, you really like it becomes all. I will say this: if anyone out there is thinking about making a documentary, do it, but only do it if you're willing to make your entire life about that thing. Like it for me, I can't speak to others' experience, but my experience has been like it's full dedication. It's rejiggering your entire life so this thing can happen. And it's extremely challenging. But like with the punk rock doc that I did, the Fat Wreck, I ended up meeting all my musical heroes, like all of them, and
we're that's in really cool
places that I wouldn't think I ever would be. And it's good and it's bad, right? Because now I'm so close to it that I don't want to say jaded in the right word. I just haven't, I'm in a different place with it now. Which is like, I still appreciate it. It's just, it's not my deep passion as it was before. And I don't know if that'll happen with podcasts because they're so varied and so different. And, but I'm curious to see. But like, I my warning to those out there: if I like what you do, be careful. I might just put you in a movie, depending on what that is. So I don't know. Podcasting as a medium and as a thing, I it deserves to be up there. I think what you do is, especially for the people who probably listen to you on a regular basis, you're a big part of their life. You know, you become a part of someone's life, which is, you know, that's a really cool thing, you know, to be able to do that. And it's a thing where you can, I think, you know, I do film, and film costs a lot of money. It costs a lot of money. You have to raise money. And I would say if you do a pretty large podcast, you probably have to do some of that, but it's so similar to punk rock to me. I think that's why there's like these parallels. I have a saying, it's like podcasting is like punk rock without the drugs. Cause it's like these communities build, and it's very DIY. Obviously it can go soar to different levels, but for a lot of people, it's a very DIY thing. Like, oh, I'm going to get a microphone, or even some people, like maybe they only have their iPhone, or they only have this thing, but if they have an idea, they can execute because the barrier to entry is low. You can try things and without having to reach out to a major sponsor, you know, to like, oh, you can't do like with a documentary, I can start it, but I can't finish it without major resources. Or in the case of the movie I'm making, because I have standards, like it has to meet a certain quality level, because we're trying to make what I'm trying to do is make a cinematic journey of an audio medium. And so it needs to be elevated beyond just, you know, it needs to look really great. It needs to be really great. It needs to be well done. And also I'm telling the story of some of the best storytellers out there. And so the story has to be really good. It has to it has to be good. So it takes resources to do so. But with a podcast, theoretically, depending on what kind of podcast you're doing, you can throw up some microphones and start going. And I think that's a pretty amazing thing. I think that's why there's, you know, millions of podcasts. They're like literally millions. Now, I think there's only like 300,000 or 400,000 that publish on a monthly basis.
Still, or that's a lot.
But that's a lot. But that's the thing. You can find a podcast about anything. Like any, like, oh, I want to find a podcast about feeding horses. Oh, I'm sure there is one.
Yeah.
I'm sure. There's like anything you can think of, there's probably a podcast about it. And then it's a huge podcast? Probably not. But it's someone who's really passionate about it because they made a podcast about it, you know? So can I ask you a question?
Sure.
What made you start your podcast?
So Roadie Radio started before I got involved. A few different librarians during the pandemic were trying to start a podcast as a way to have library programs that people could listen to when the library was closed, because we had to shut down for like a little bit during the pandemic, not a long time, but we were all working from home, and normally we would have like lectures or performances or all kinds of things in the library, but we couldn't do that anymore. So Roadie Radio started as a way to bring those programs to our patrons through podcasting so that they could still enjoy that stuff from home. And from there, it's grown. And now we do all kinds of stuff. We do book recommendations. We interview interesting people like yourself. We talk about different foods in Rhode Island and which ones we like the best. So it's all kinds of things that I think we still try to keep to the core of, would we like to bring this to library patrons? But we also have gotten to a point where it's mostly me and the two other hosts, Emily and Dave. And we try
Hi,
to
Emily
like, bring...
and Dave. I'm sure you're listening.
Yes. and we like to bring our personalities into it a little bit so that hopefully we are like a fixture in some people's lives, and they enjoy listening to us.
I think that's so cool. I think it's you're in an intersection of lots of things that I like. So I am a big fan of libraries. I like just the whole concept. I know probably everyone usually thinks of libraries as books, but libraries, I think, from what my understanding, are so much more. I know my daughter has done programs at libraries, and I know there's a lot of film, you know, because there's like movies that you can borrow, and sometimes like there's just, it's not just books. It's a place of knowledge and information, And librarians are the cool. I think librarians are super cool. So I think you're super cool. I think librarians are so cool. So rousing endorsement on my part for librarians.
Well, that's great.
So that's cool.
And we would, libraries, I don't know if I could speak for all libraries because I'm only one librarian, but I'm pretty sure libraries would love to have a documentary made about us. Just a heads up.
They have,
Sounds like you like libraries. So if you wanted
There's not a library documentary yet. There's got to be.
I don't know that there really is.
What? That seems insane to me. Someone hasn't done a documentary on what it takes. Because I know libraries have, in recent years, have faced a lot of, you know, pushback, especially right now with some of the politics involved in book banning and things like that, where like the you know, because it is a socialist institution in the regards that it's access to, everyone has access to it, in much the same way an emergency room is, like, everyone just has access. I know that sometimes when we set up libraries in other countries and things like that, that it's like a fountain of knowledge and information that, you know, and it's sometimes an anchor to a lot of communities. And you know, there are people who are the unhoused. It's a place where they have access to the internet or some way to connect with those things. And that's not the primary thing, but I mean, it's access to everybody, regardless of your economic stature. You know,
exactly.
I'm sorry I turned this around to make this a library.
No, that's fine. I mean, to tie it all in, there's also this really cool t-shirt that I will someday buy, but it's like a library, like friends organization created it to raise money for this library. But it says, "What's more punk than a public library?" And it's like, it's so true, because it's just like anyone can have access to anything. And, you know,
it shows what sometimes we can do as a collective. I mean, I'm okay with capitalism. It's like, it has a lot of, capitalism does a lot of amazing things. It does a lot of bad things and creates weird incentives sometimes, but sometimes those incentives can be helpful. And I'm not one of those black and white people that says, oh, this is bad, this is good. It's and that's why I think it's a great book that I've read three times, called Sapiens. I don't know if you're familiar.
I've heard of it, but I haven't read it.
You should check that out. It's,
I will.
Amazing, amazing book. It covers a lot of ground. It's a brief history of humankind. So, but it covers capitalism, and the writer, he's this Israeli guy that is that he's a vegetarian, all these things, but he goes into, capitalism and one of its benefits. And it's that it really, like, when there's a problem, it has a way of pulling resources to solve a problem. You know, if it affects capitalism,
right.
Let's be clear. If something's going to take away capitalism, it'll pull its resources. I mean, COVID is a pretty good example, because where there was a financial incentive to make sure this thing got taken care of. And by the way, most countries shut down their economies to save people. So for a brief moment, the priority wasn't capital. The priority was people. That only lasted for a few months, but for a few moments, then, like, shutting down an economy is an insane thing to do in capitalism, but it did it because it needed to save the rest of the things. And then they created a vaccine. Some of these vaccines were, you know, fast-tracked, and some of those are amazing because resources went into them. And that's in the book, he talks about that. Like, when, ever since kind of capitalism usurped royalty, because it used to be bloodline, but the corporation kind of usurped royalty because it was able to build up more capital. And ever since then, you've had the elimination of, other than socially, disease, hunger, have pretty much been eliminated. Not eliminated, but it only exists now because of humans and politics. But we have enough food to feed everybody.
Right.
And that has a lot to do with what capitalism was able to do. My point is that one of the things that capitalism has done, and according to the book, so I'm referring to Sapiens in a lot of this, and he's a historian, so it's pulling in lots of different kind of things. But capitalism, it integrates lots of other socialist things. So the reason, so like an emergency room doesn't really make sense in a fully capitalist, strictly capitalist society. But in order for capitalism to exist and survive, you need a certain baseline of support for people. And right. So modern capitalism, and by the way, I'm willing to be pushed back on all this because I'm no expert.
Neither am I. To
make that clear. But from my understanding, the things that I've read and things like that, it integrated some socialist concepts like a library or, like I said, like an emergency room or, you know, some of the, like in the United States, some of like, you know, Medicaid and these things that are entitlements that people call. But really, those things are there to stabilize the capitalism. Because right. if you have a bunch of people dying on the street, that's not helpful to the system. So yeah. I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying for its survival, it integrates these socialist concepts into it. And I don't know where I was going with this because I'm not really like a hardcore capitalist. I'm more of a person that's kind of like, it's just nuanced, if that makes sense. And you know, we exist within the systems that we are born. So we have to learn how to adapt to them. I don't think capitalism is the end all be all, but as far as right now, it doesn't seem like it's going anywhere anytime soon. Right. So we kind of have to operate within that system. But going back to libraries, I think libraries are these amazing things that show that we're not fully just cutthroat capitalism. It's just not the way we operate. And sometimes in some corners it is that way. But if you look on the landscape, the fact that those even exist is a really cool thing. And maybe there needs to be a documentary about it. Like my mind is blown. That there's not a documentary about even just librarians.
I mean, I can look it up, but I think there's like a couple movies, but not documentaries.
I mean, there has to be, right?
There's a documentary about the New York Public Library, but that was made in 2017.
Well, that's fair.
So it's a few years old and probably doesn't, I don't know if that includes like all of the book banning stuff that's going on. But
no,
that
I'm
seems
sure
to be the only one.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's not a lot considering they're such a ubiquitous part of our culture. You know,
I think you found your next topic.
Oh, don't do that to me. I cannot think about another documentary. I have to finish this one. And then I have the other one I was talking about, Anchorin, that needs to be done. I have a 2 hour and 40 minute cut of that, but I had to put it on the back burner while I finish this Age of Audio. Cause it's kind of like I feel like if this one does well, it'll give me the resources to finish the other one in a good way. So,
good.
Anyway, I didn't mean to derail from your questions. What
no,
questions
that's
you
fine.
Have?
All right. We've talked about a lot of the things that I had questions about. Who are some of the people from the podcast industry that you're featuring in the film?
Well, of course, like, as I mentioned, Ira Glass, Roman Mars. I mean, we have Kara Swisher. I don't know if your listeners are familiar with Kara Swisher. She's more in the tech space, but she was on stage with Steve Jobs when he introduced podcasting into iTunes, which was a big moment for podcasting at that point. The second biggest after the podcast app going on the iPhone, which I think is probably one of the biggest technological enablers of podcasting being a ubiquitous thing where everyone had access to it. Because in the film, we talk about this a lot, but the early days of podcasting was very male, very white, very wealthy, generally speaking, because it was people who had computers, access to the internet, and really had any like idea of this kind of stuff. So it wasn't really ubiquitous. But when the iPhone came out and they put a podcast app on it, that really put it in the hands of most people. And Serial hit, or like within like 2 or 3 months of that app coming out. So it was like, we talk about this in the film as well, but Serial was kind of one of those breakout moments for podcasts where it jumped into the mainstream. There'll be arguments whether or not it's the most important podcast, but I would argue it's the one that, it was the one where they did SNL skits about podcasts. And prior to that, that really was not a thing. And so, saying nothing about the storytelling or some of the problematic nature of what I consider true crime podcasts, because I don't think that was their intention to begin with. That set aside, it was a thing that kind of people could point to and say, okay, now most people know what a podcast is. And so Let's see who else we got. We got, if you go to aoamovie.com, plug, you can see our list of interview people. There's, I would say go to the website and look at the list. It's like, it's stacked. We got some of the, like I said, the industry is huge, so it's not everybody, but it really, in that corner, we got some really amazing people that, were gracious enough to let some person come into their offices and their homes and interview them about podcasting. So we got to go to the This American Life offices a couple of times and
that's
hang
very
out.
Cool.
They have a secret room behind a bookshelf that I got to go into.
I love that.
Which we filmed and we will probably show at some point. So, like, if you're into podcasts, even if you don't know all these names, Fred Armisen, the comedian, SNL guy, he did an impression of Ira Glass on a Weekend Update skit that was taped but did not air, which speaks to Ira Glass's fame, where he is famous enough to have an SNL skit written about him, but not famous enough for it to air.
That's great. I'm sure he'll want that on his tombstone someday.
I think he did. I remember him talking about this recently. I think he was with on a celebrity's podcast. I think it's the Doogie Howser. What's his name?
Neil Patrick Harris.
Yeah, he was on Neil Patrick Harris's podcast, and they shared a clip of him talking about that. So I'm sure he's not too sad about it. I think that'd be a pretty good. I'd be okay if someone did an SNL skit about me. And it didn't air. It's cool. That seems
same.
Awesome.
Yeah. So when is Age of Audio expected to be released and where will people be able to watch it?
I'll say that is the hardest question to ever ask a documentarian. We're in the middle of our, as we're speaking, we're in the middle of our crowdfunding thing, which is going slower than I hoped, but there are lots of other opportunities that are presenting themselves from the promotion of that. And it really depends on, it comes down to money. We're hoping that the film should be out next year sometime, or at least hitting festivals and doing some screenings. I don't know if it'll be released like where everyone could watch it. But we're hoping for some type of screenings to start happening next year if we're able to get to that point. It's hard to speak on these things because nothing's set yet. But there's lots of interest in the film once it's done from some of the bigger streamers. That doesn't mean something's definitely going to happen, but they know about it and are interested in it. So it may end up on one of the streamers. When the movie comes out, it will be available. And I would even say, like, what I've done with my previous films is we've done film festivals, but I've also opened it up to smaller groups. So maybe if, this is very theoretical, but say the library decided they wanted to screen the film at the library for some reason, and they could get 20 or 30 people, that's something that we're open up to. So before it comes out on streaming, so there may be a way for someone to see it. Maybe I come and Chuck Stanton does a Q&A with us. We did a lot of similar things with our movie, The Fat Wreck, where we did 70 screenings around the world at independent theaters and some bars, and where they were able to get a group together. Maybe sometimes bands played. So I'm open to a lot of different ideas. I'm also someone who thinks the movie should be seen is the highest priority, opposed to making money. I need to make money to recoup myself, but I always feel like if someone's really excited about the film and wants to put on a screening where they think at least 20 or 30 people are going to be there, if it's free, I don't care about getting money. If they are charging, then I want half. Well, I mean,
that's
you know
fair.
What I mean? Like, if you're making money, like, let's make money together. If you're not making money, if you're, doing it for other reasons, I'm open to that as well. As you know, I wouldn't want someone to make money off the hard work that we did without us participating. But
right.
I also would rather if someone was doing it where they were volunteering and they were putting in the effort to set up a screening and doing all the mental labor to get that done, I'm open to not even having any money come in if no one's making any money, if someone's doing it on a volunteer basis. And like I said, like a library, if it's a free thing, then And I'm putting that out there to you and any other libraries that want to show the movie at some point. It doesn't have to be a paid situation if no one's making any money, if that makes sense.
That makes sense.
There may be a chance for someone to see it sooner, depending on what's going on in that part of the country and where we're at with the film. We still have a third act to kind of fully flesh out at this point, which is still kind of working its way through. I will say this. We are working with Ronald Young Jr., who has a podcast called Wait For It that has recently become kind of a critical darling. It was on the New York Times top 10 podcasts and a bunch of other lists. And Ron is based out of Virginia, really great guy, amazing podcast. You should go listen to it if you haven't. Wait For It. And it's about, he's a heavier guy, and it's about his experience with that, going to the doctors and how it socially it works. So Wait For It is a little bit of a pun, because W-E-I-G-H-T.
Love a good pun.
Yes, me too. and he's going to be someone that we're following, and he's going to be like the person the you can connect with as we go through and tell the stuff about podcasting. So it's not just a bunch of numbers and big podcasters that people don't know, but hopefully the idea is that you get to see through Ron, what it takes to make these and what the people who do it are about, and what, you know, at least from his perspective, what they go through to make this thing happen and the challenges. Cause he's kind of a one man. He's got some people he works with like an audio engineer and another producer that are remote, but for the most part, it's him. And I would like to showcase that. He's a really great guy, very kind, really funny, and he's an amazing storyteller. So we haven't filmed that part yet. That's a kind of a new thing that kind of presented itself just recently. So documentaries aren't done till they're done. So
fair enough.
So but that's because life keeps happening. The story keeps unfolding.
There you go.
So it's like any story is like, you got to decide an end point, you know, at some point, but that's, we'll hopefully see. So all that being said, hopefully sometime next year, you'll get to see something. As of right now, you can look at our trailer and get a good sense of what we're doing. If any of your listeners are so inclined, follow us on our Age of Audio, and everything is AOA Movie. So like all our socials, the website, everything is AOA Movie. And if you look up AOA Movie, you'll find us and you can watch a few different things. And I think by the time this comes out, there'll be even more clips that we've released that people can check out and kind of get a sense of what the movie's about. If this wasn't clear. Like, what's this movie about?
You probably gave them a pretty good idea of what it's about.
I imagine if you made it to this point in the podcast, you have a pretty decent idea what the movie's about. And also get an idea from my, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm not in the movie, if that makes sense. Well, I guess I kind of am. I'm in a skit. But I'm not in the movie. Like, I'm not a person talking in the movie or hosting anything in the movie. So really, if you're going to get a sense, if you like me, you'll probably like the movie. Because it's going to be a reflection of my taste and those kind of things. But I think that's our goal, is to have something out by next year. It really has a lot to do with things that are out of my control, but I'm doing my darndest. I'll say that much.
Well, we will keep an eye out for it, and we'll be sure to let our listeners know when it's out.
Awesome. Did you have any other questions for me?
My only other question was, is there anything else we didn't touch on that you'd like our listeners to know?
Ooh, that's always a good follow-up. That's just well done.
That's a good closer.
Yeah, it's a great closer. Is there anything? I think I talked a lot. I think I don't know if there's much there. Although I will say this, support your local library, go to their events. Like I said before, it's not just books, and as anyone who's probably listening to your podcast knows this, but participate in what the library is doing. And if you have kids, take them to the library. I think it's such a beneficial thing to have a library be a part of a child's upbringing, so they understand not only what it is, but have memories of what it's like to be at a library and go to librarian based events and meet librarians and people who are the stewards of knowledge and information. I just said that. I was off the dome.
That was great.
Right off the dome. So I think that's the one thing I'd say is go support your local librarian, please. And then watch our film when it comes out. And tell people about Age of Audio if you're listening to this and it strikes your fancy and it's something that you're excited about. Don't keep it to yourself. Tell other people, because that's kind of the way, we're independent. We don't have a lot of money. And as librarians know, you have to figure out what to do with limited resources. And one of the ways that happens is people telling other people about the things. And so support local libraries and also check out Age of Audio at aoamovie.com. And you can find out more about the movie and see who's in it. I think I named most of the people, but there's a laundry list of people that you might be excited about. And also, if you have any opinions, reach out to us via the website or one of our social media things. And I love to hear back from people and very much appreciate that you had me on your podcast.
Well, yeah, thank you for the shout out and thank you for coming on Rhodey Radio and talking about your documentary. We're very excited to see it.
Thank you so much, Lauren. You're so awesome.
Thank you for listening. You can find more information about Age of Audio at aoamovie.com or on social media at aoamovie. Rhodey Radio is proud to be a resident partner of the Rhode Island Center for the Book and brought to you by library staff and community members all around the Ocean State. The project has been funded in part by grants from the Rhode Island Council for the Humanities, the National Endowment for the Humanities, and the American Library Association. You can find more from Rhodey Radio on Facebook and Instagram, and if you enjoyed today's episode, subscribe to Rhodey Radio and rate or review us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to help us reach more Rhode Islanders.